Hello again, fellow basement dwellers. This is Patrick O'Dowd. Welcome you in once again to another edition of Bandwagon Nerds. And I'm, of course, joined by a pair of co-hosts. We always have our good friend Dave Ungar. And Dave, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Patrick. It's always a pleasure to be here with you, especially on this lovely January, this holiday weekend again.
Right, yeah.
Another holiday weekend.
They do a lot of holidays packed all in here and recording on special dates and times, pulling the curtain back. We're recording an evening early. But I want to go back because we do have our third co-host, but it's not the co-host everyone's expecting. But before we introduce him, Dave, last week promises were made. We have them recorded on the show.
Yes.
And I do believe the statement was, I'm good to record until September or something along the line. I don't know if you kept the audio, but we're going to find it.
It's because it's on the last episode.
Because at both the beginning and the end of the show, Rick, who now I'm no longer going to pronounce his last name right, I'm going to do it Midwest style and just pronounce it phonetically, Rick Lachney, is not here. Big Rick, not here again because a football team won a national title and he had to go to a parade.
Yeah, that's pretty much it, man. He's out in down in wherever. Where is LSU? Baton Rouge or somewhere around there?
Yeah, somewhere in there. Who cares? I mean, it's just one big swamp down there that gets flooded by hurricanes. Who cares? Just don't care right now. Promises were made and promises broke. So you know what I did? We went to the bullpen. We brought in the ace. We brought in a man who is willing to jump in at a moment's notice. We put up the bat signal and got our guy, PC Tunney, back to guest host tonight on Bandwagon Nerds. Tunney, how you doing?
I'm willing to wear a wire and steal signs as well out of the bullpen.
You're right.
You're the Josh Hader of the Bandwagon Nerds podcast, Tunney.
I am not going to be associated with Josh Hader for Josh Hader reasons in his previous younger self. Sorry. Social media. So I'll pass on that one. But
we banged on a trash can a couple of times, yeah. And PC Tunney knew the sign, knew where to go, and hit one out of the park.
That's right.
I'll put it this way: it's a pleasure to be back. Thank you once again for having me back. And Dave, I seen you have the beer there, and Patrick, you got the water. So cheers to you both.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Wait, water? You're drinking water?
I got things to do. I told you.
That's right. You got real things to do.
It's actually currently snowing here in Massachusetts while recording this podcast. I have to get up at 5 in the morning tomorrow to go to work. And so after we finish recording this podcast, which right now is at 8:38 p.m. on the 18th of January, got to go out and shovel somewhere between 3 to 6 inches of snow. So not a lot, but want to make sure I can get out in time. So
yeah, I had that storm last night. Have fun. It's heavy. Okay. It's wet. We got 6 inches.
Yeah. I 3 to 6, whatever. Not a big deal. It's not looking that heavy right now. It's supposed to be over any time now. So if it passed through, I'm feeling pretty good, but we got a loaded show tonight, guys. We're going to do part two of the 80s project. Tunney was good enough to come up with his top 10 fantasy movies of the 80s as well. And that's the genre we're covering. We are going to do that in the second half of the show. But to kick off tonight, we're going to pick up where we've left off. We are currently covering Netflix's The Witcher. We are actually on episode 2. I forgot to change the rundown. Shame on me.
It's all right. But yeah. We knew what we were doing.
Gentlemen, is everybody up to date on The Witcher? At this point, I'm seeing a thumbs up from Tunney.
Yes,
I've seen a thumbs up from Dave, because this was another show that I still feel like we're building a world here, introducing some characters and creating some background, but still really building a world that we're going to be getting deeper and deeper into. And this one seemed to focus a lot on the relationship that humans have with elves. At least that's kind of what I gathered out of it, is you followed three separate storylines and all of them seem to have some connection to elves, whether it be humans and elves at war with each other. The idea that elves have somehow stolen what I guess you would, I would call it magic, but it seems to have a different name and it's eluding me.
Chaos.
And we got, yeah, chaos. And we got introduced to a new character this week who clearly figures to be a major player moving forward in Yennefer, I believe was her name. Yes. And was a very intriguing character. And I can't wait to see where she goes, as that seems to be one that they're going to be developing well over time over the next 8 episodes.
Yeah, she's what, half elf, I think, is what's going on. You've got
her father was half elf.
Right. And then you've got this weird relationship she has with the one guy who is in a portal, who I thought right up into the end he was just in her head. But it turns out he's been set up by the sorcerer from the first episode to kind of get to her. She's clearly got significant power. She's plucked, called a piglet, taken to this, I don't know, man, the damn place looked like, Jesus, what's the name of the prison in Harry Potter where they take
everybody? Azkaban?
Yeah, it looks like they were taking her to Azkaban where they're doing all this stuff going on. And
when wizarding school goes wrong.
Yeah, very wrong. Very wrong indeed. I really like this episode a lot. I love what they did with Yennefer. She immediately, you get the feeling that she's a sympathetic character, but I know from my friends who've watched this that she's about to go through a major transformation and is going to go apparently from, well, I don't know, from not to hot is what I've been told.
I creeped her on IMDb, not going to lie. Wanted to see who the actress was that was playing her and was like, oh. So I was like, oh, all right.
And the funny thing, man,
Tony over there making faces, he agrees. So
the funny thing is my wife is like way ahead of me in this series now, all of a sudden. And it touches on stuff. She does not like nudity in movies and stuff like that. And I hear there's a ton of it coming our way. But she really liked. That's too bad. But she had Tony with two thumbs up. But she really likes the show so far, and she's watched. She's way ahead of me. And I said, look, I binge it too, but we're on a schedule. We're only watching one episode a week, and that's the thing. I do like, you know, the relationship between the Witcher and the Bard. That took on.
Yeah, the Bard is great.
He is.
I love the Bard.
He is, the Witcher. What is it? Geralt is his name? Geralt,
yeah.
He was great. I like the Bard making fun of him. Go ahead, I'm ready to die. You know, all that sort of stuff. And
I couldn't help but, like, as they were walking along, though, I would be like, Sir Robin ran away, 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 away he ran. Oh, brave Sir Robin. I went straight Monty Python watching him walking alongside the horse.
Yeah.
Great film, by the way, Monty Python and the Quest for the Holy Grail. Kids, watch it. Yeah. Comedic genius.
Comedic legends. I thought, like you said, Patrick, a world building episode. The stuff going on with the princess. What's her name? Syria.
No, that's a country.
Middle East. She's not that.
No, Siri. Like C-I-R-I.
Like Siri.
Also like the iPhone.
Yeah, the Siri. iPhone, yeah. Siri.
Which I just actually had to turn off Siri because it thought I was talking to her when I said that. So,
it's really good so far. I mean, we're just scratching the surface. So
yeah,
I
like that. There's a lot of threads. I like that. It looks like it's I can't wait to see how these threads start to converge and we see where the actual story goes. I like coming into this blind and not really knowing what any of this all means. And again, you saw through Ciri's eyes, you saw this war with the elves taking place. Through Geralt's eyes, you saw the elvish perspective as to why this war is taking place. And that juxtaposition, I think, makes for an interesting story moving forward. And Geralt actually turning the tables when he's been captured to gain his release I just thought it was a nice play. And I think as we move forward, it's going to be interesting to see if that comes back to help him later on down the road. Cause I don't think that those characters were introduced to be one-offs. Like, I don't think this was a monster of the week sort of thing for Geralt.
I get the impression that Nilfgaard from the first episode is an elvish army or an elvish kingdom or something like that.
Right.
Retaking
their lands. That seemed to be the idea.
Right. But I want to know what Tunny's thought of this series, the first two episodes. I mean, we're all in. But Tony, how do you like it so far?
Let's put it this way. I had the day off Thursday, so I'm like, perfect. Got plenty of time to watch two episodes. And I can tell you that I stopped myself on purpose because I knew at what point we'd be ending this conversation at. But I can tell you, as not being a contractually obligated full-time member of this podcast, the next time we talk, I will have finished the season. I loved it. It was great. I can't wait to, you know, get ahead and start watching the rest of it. I'm glad you guys got me to watch it. It's kind of something that I don't usually watch, that kind of genre, but I'm really enjoying it. I'm enjoying the different relationships. And it's funny that you bring up the different points of view and the different ways they're trying to tell this story and how it's all connecting, because to me, that's what's making them, I would imagine, probably gain some ground here with the good story. I know I've heard of the video game before. Yeah, I've actually seen the video game before. And I know there's a lot of books too, but definitely they're done a great job with the series. And you say there's more nudity ahead, man. Good for them.
And I have heard that the story is based more on the books than the video game. That's that's what I've understood from talking to some other people. So that creates a lot of options.
Yeah, I think it resonates really well. I think it's very important when you do these stories, because it's real, that there's in real life, when there's a conflict between two nations, neither side thinks they're the bad side. And that's really what I felt like you saw out of this episode, is that neither side feels like they're in the wrong here. So as that plays forward, I think it'll be really interesting.
Hey, Patrick, did you know this is kind of a milestone episode for Bandwagon Nerds? This is our 10th episode. We made it to 10.
We did. Woo. And you know, and I was so excited to rip on Rick that I forgot to acknowledge that this is our 10th episode and that you can still hear us streaming live on the, or not live, but you can hear us streaming on the Chairshot Radio Network. We'll go through paying the bills about halfway through the show. But 10 episodes and Rick's made 4.
That's good attendance.
Or missed 4. Maybe he's missed 4. Maybe that's what, I don't know. He's maybe batting 500, which would get you in the Hall of Fame.
He's a D student.
Yeah, right? He's got a 50 for the class. But enough about Rick. Let's go back to the trailer park. I think I'm going to make this a thing. I think we're starting to get a decent enough amount of trailers running out here for movies that I think we can visit the trailer park probably about once a week, and we need to find a song for the trailer park. Maybe Rick could find something from his people down south. Something with a banjo. Maybe that kid from Deliverance is around still plucking away.
Wow.
We can do that. I don't know. But I love the South. I swear. Waffle House is delicious. Anyway.
It shall rise again, Patrick.
I'm sure it will. You know, they keep saying that. But anyway, yeah, I want to kind of shift gears, stay on track, and go to the trailer park. There were a couple of Marvel films that had some footage drop. We went with a little DC last week with Birds of Prey. This week we got a trailer for Morbius, which, for those of you who don't know, kids, which would be Rick if you were at the show, Morbius is a Spider-Man villain, kind of a what I would say is like a B-tier sort of, maybe even C-tier villain on the Rose Gallery when you think about where he started.
Mid-Carter, Patrick. It's okay. You can call him a mid-Carter.
I mean, I think he's on Sunday Night Heat and opening the show. Like, what are you talking about, mid-Carter?
He's on Main Event.
And anyway, he's a living vampire. He's on Velocity. Like, he's on the show that no longer exists.
Damn.
Let me tell you something. You know how excited I was when they first started Sunday Night Heat? I was like, oh, yeah. Another wrestling show, and now it's okay. Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Oh, it's a punchline.
You know,
it's okay. It's okay. I hear you. But
how much you want to bet AEW's second show is Sunday Night Heat, right?
Oh God, I sure hope so. That would be excellent. But so Morbius. For those of you, like we were saying, he's the living vampire, and I think that there's this interesting thing because a lot of people mischaracterize him because he's a vampire, but he's not. Because he's a human that has taken on through, depending on which origin story you go with, he's basically a human vampire bat hybrid, and he does need to rely on plasma to live, but he's not a vampire in the sense of, you know, garlic stake through the heart, can't go out in sunlight sort of person. But we got this trailer dropped. Jared Leto is the lead playing Morbius. And I just got to say, there was a lot to take in this trailer.
Sure was. And it
was something that buried a lot of repeat viewings just to catch all the Easter eggs.
Yeah, I mean, Morbius has got a lot of similarities to, like, Blade. You know, the same sort of kind of living vampire, but not a vampire sort of thing. But he is, you know, to me, it's like, okay, are they trying to expand, you know, this? I mean, is this how they're going to try and implement the Spider-Verse? You know, now you've got Morbius, you've got Venom. We know that they're looking to do a Venom 2. You know, are they trying to create the Spider-Verse in a live action format? I don't know about that. But like you said, Morbius had a lot of stuff going on in that trailer. You know, he's got some strange sickness. He's dying. He goes, finds a cure. And, you know, the cure is immortality. You know, I'm halfway thinking, man, I would trade immortality for some of the shit I have going on. You know, that's not a bad trade-off. Okay, so I got to eat blood, drink blood and that sort of thing. That's a downer, but I digress. The trailer was good. I mean, and you did get a good look at Morbius and how they've portrayed him, and the makeup job looks fantastic, and Jared Leto looks like this is a more natural fit for him than Joker might have been in Suicide Squad.
He hasn't been going to blood banks and, like, trying to, like, order plasma for people and weird shit like that, like you did with the Joker.
Right.
I hope. For me, the trailer itself was fine and the story they were telling was fine. The crossover stuff that was in that trailer that clearly indicates that they are involving the Marvel Cinematic Universe take, in my opinion, with a couple of different things. And some people are,
elaborate, please. What did you see? I'm curious.
Well, you saw the Vulture.
Yes.
At the end of the trailer.
Okay, sure.
You had Michael Keaton appear at the end of the trailer, and you also had a Spider-Man poster that is graffitied calling him a murderer.
Right.
And some people have speculated, there's something else. Some other people have said that there's something with the end of the Spider-Verse connection. I didn't see that. I just saw the connection to the MCU movies with just that there's clearly a backlash against Spider-Man as we know it in some way, shape, or form. And then you have, like I said, what I felt was the big reveal. Like when Michael Keaton showed up at the end of that trailer, I actually was like, oh shit. Okay. They're going to connect it. And that's not a bad move for Sony if you want this to make sense and have Spider-Man movies that don't happen in them yet.
Yeah. How quickly we diverted from, oh, sorry, Marvel, you can't use Spider-Man, to like, shit, let's integrate the whole fucking thing. Let's do it now. Right, you know, that's good marketing strategy for both companies. I mean, you don't think that they would have done that on purpose, right? Just to create buzz, to get people in a frenzy to say, oh, they're going to pull Spider-Man from the MCU and get everybody all, you know, wild with anticipation. You know, and now look at where it is.
I even went a step further in my mind, like Michael Keaton's most famous superhero portrayal was of Batman. And now
shut up.
Gonna play a part in this movie, though, where Jared Leto as Morbius, I mean, the Bat synergy is still there in the back of your head if you're a big DC fan.
Rick's not here. We still got to talk about Batman. God damn it.
He's ever present, Patrick. You know.
Good
that.
Lord. He's drinking.
If you couldn't connect those dots, come on now.
I'm not saying I couldn't connect those dots. How's this? I don't want to connect those dots. Ask Dave what I think of DC Marvel crossovers.
You don't like them, which I don't get, but that's all right.
I don't. They're stupid. They're cash grabs. But anyway, that's cool. They are. It's a dope cash grab.
There's good Marvel DC. Just because you didn't like JLA Avengers does not negate all the other. There's probably like 20 different Marvel DC crossovers. They're all pretty good.
It's so awesome. Having it there today. What happens when Thor fights Superman again?
He loses. That's what happens.
See, there's Mr. DC pushing his narrative all day long. You're also the guy who probably thinks Batman can't lose in any fight.
Oh,
anyway,
no, I don't think that at all.
That's a good answer. The other thing that I really do wonder what this points to, though, is, and I really hope so, because this is my favorite Spidey story, the Sinister Six. We're halfway there, in a way, if you're using a rogues gallery.
Now, I thought Kraven was your favorite Spider-Man story.
No, Kraven's Last Hunt, but amongst some of the older stuff, and Kraven's involved in that. Kraven's Last Hunt, it was okay. The first It was the first comic book story I ever read.
Okay.
That my grandmother bought me books, not knowing what they were.
Started off really well.
And literally ended with him blowing his head off with a shotgun. And I was like eight at the time. It was a dark time.
It happens.
I was going through some things, but no, I think, Kraven's also rumored to be the villain of, the third Spider-Man movie that's coming eventually, which would be, I'm fine with. I like Kraven. He's a good character.
We could only hope so for so
and
much.
if it gets to a Sinister Six film, if it's done well, and I just hope it doesn't suck, because I'm assuming Sony's going to be in charge of that. And if Sony's in charge of it, I trust it a lot less than I trust if Kevin Feige or whoever his successor would be in the MCU would be to take it over.
Yeah, I think they're moving definitely into a more, they're expanding the universe. That's for sure. They're trying to bring in various characters. I mean, like I said, I think a couple episodes ago, my biggest concern with Marvel is just too many irons in the fire, trying to do too much, you know, and how do you balance it? Now, if any company can do it, it's Marvel. And, right. You know, the MCU and Marvel Studios, if anybody can figure out how to get the balance for all these different moving parts, I have faith that Disney and Marvel Studios can pull that off, but they are taking on a Herculean task right now. If you're telling me they're going to introduce the Spider-Verse and then New Mutants, like you said last week, Patrick, that maybe New Mutants ties into X-Men. And now you've got that dynamic going on. And then we've got to bring in the Fantastic Four at some point. And we've got to stay true to the legacy characters and develop some of these new ones like Shang-Chi. And I mean, that's a lot of stuff. A lot of things to balance.
Plus, you're wanting to bring the Justice League into it all. So, you know, we've got that too. We got to worry about that weird Batman crossover.
Once Disney buys, Warner Brothers, then, you know, then it's fair game. But
by the way, did you love Disney being like, Fox doesn't exist anymore to this week? Did you see that?
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. So basically, 20th Century Fox, because Tony made a funny face. We rolled out a new, name for the property now. 20th Century Fox is no more, and it's just I can't even remember what the name of it is, but it's something like 20th Century Pictures or something like that. But Fox is dead. They stomped on it, crushed its little skull, put it right next to the hound.
You know, foxes are endangered species in California. That's blasphemous. Well,
and now we know why Disney. We know what Disney's responsible. Everybody,
yeah. You know, they're just 2 hours down the street, so we know what they're responsible for.
So we got some more Black Widow footage too, and I want to talk about that before we go to break. So for those of you that watched the national title game, college football national title game, which by the way, if Rick were here, we know he would have watched it, and we know he would have had something to comment because he was watching the game.
You've got him on Facebook, right? That boy was drinking some major alcohol that night, like 13 shots, I think was what we had announced. I talked to him the next day. It's like, how are you even standing? He goes, I'm not really sure. I shouldn't be driving.
I'm just saying for whatever reason, whether he was attentive or not, like I'm not too bothered by that. I'm just saying he would have been present for the airing of a couple of extended pieces of footage from Black Widow. We got a little bit more, mostly showing more of, our Rogues Gallery, and Dave, I'll turn it over to you first, because Tony has admitted pre-show, I'm going to just call him out like I'm calling out Rick, that he didn't really notice too much. So what did you pull from Black Widow's new footage?
There's not a lot that's new, I didn't think. I mean, the biggest thing I got from the second trailer was the introduction of the Taskmaster. And that's the biggest thing that they've done in this is they introduced that character who, you know, if anybody plays like Marvel Contest of Champions on the iPhone or Android or something like that, Taskmaster is one of the characters on there. As soon as I saw that shield flash, I'm like, oh shit, they're bringing Taskmaster into the MCU, which is great because now again you're creating options. He's a character who, you know, he's got some versatility to him. They can plug him into certain different franchises. He's got that cool look. He's got the shield. He's got the helmet, the mask. So I'm excited to see them introducing the Taskmaster into the MCU and what they're going to do with him. Like, I imagine maybe he might be the tie-in. He might be something with Phase 4 when this whole thing is said and done. But I don't know. But I think that was the main thing I noticed.
Well, here's the thing. This has a tie into Phase 4. We keep, like, the last couple of episodes, we've been talking about, like, well, maybe, what's going to, how's it going to, it's not a question of if it's going to tie into Phase 4. It's how it's going to tie into Phase 4.
Right.
I'm going to play Rick here for a second, though, Dave, and we'll let you be the expert. So, Taskmaster, like, what's he do? Like, what's his thing? What's his powers? Why should we worry about Taskmaster?
Jeez, I don't, I'm not an expert on Taskmaster, but.
Really?
No, I just, I know him vaguely, but I recognize him.
So Taskmaster's big ability is that he is able to mimic and perfectly replicate the fighting styles of his opponents.
Yes.
Upon watching them. And so he oftentimes can best heroes because he sees them and can combat them move for move.
Okay. That sounds,
he can't
familiar.
Take on a power, but like he could watch Black Widow fight and master her fighting style. He's perfect against Captain America. Kind of similar to what Tony did in the Civil War fight, where the suit analyzes his fight pattern, except with Taskmaster, it's that he almost mimics it perfectly.
Right. Yeah. I think I remember that. I remember that about him. So yeah, he's going to cause some problems. Cause it's like, now you're facing your functional equal in every sense of the word. You know, he's got a badass shield. He's got a badass sword and he's got a great look. So that'll be fun.
Right. I loved him. He was like the trainer in the Dark Avengers comic books when Norman Osborn took over the Avengers for a brief period of time. So I think that, like you said, there's a lot of meat on the bone there to see where he goes and what happens there. But we still don't know a whole heck of a lot about what's going on in this movie. And I don't know that that's a bad thing.
No, I they're deliberately hiding that because, yeah, like you're saying, there's going to be a tie into Phase 4. It's just how. Now, how are they tying this in? We know for a fact this is the first movie of Phase 4. So, Jesus, there's got to be something that sets everything in motion. But as for what that is, who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. Last thing I'm going to say about this before we move on. Did anybody see the Robert Downey Jr. like sort of snarky snippet when asked about his part in this movie?
No.
So he got interviewed by somebody and the character has a cameo, but apparently it's not an actual like physical cameo, like where he came and did a scene. It's more of they used footage and put him in there. And so he gets asked about his cameo and I can't even remember where it came from, but he was, he was less than thrilled with kind of the way that that got used. Cause he's going to be in a movie that he like didn't actually act in.
Paid for it.
Who knows? The guy's rolling in cash from Marvel cash. I hear Dr. Doolittle is terrible. So he'll need all the help. I mean, John Cena voices a polar bear. That should be all you need to know. But, oh, God. If that bear did that in the movie, like just I would die.
Bear coming
die.
Out. Dun, 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 dun.
Does the big paw doing one of these?
You can't see me.
So none of that's going to happen, but I bet you dollars to donuts, you could probably make a bet on that the bear will AA somebody in the movie.
I mean, there's a dragon involved, so maybe you can AA a dragon. That makes sense. That movie looks ridiculous. So, but anyway, we are at about our halfway point of the show. We're going to roll into the 80s project, but first we're going to take a little break, pay the bills, tell you all about thechairshot.com and where you can get some t-shirts. Roll them, boys.
This is your five knuckle shuffle right here, guys.
TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
Why should you visit TheChairShot.com? TheChairShot.com is your home for hard-hitting reviews, news, opinion, and analysis with attitude. Why? Because you're smarter than the average fan. TheChairShot.com. Always use your head.
This is your boy, Kenny Killer, telling you to make sure you check out TheChairShot.com, bringing you breaking news, interviews, podcasts galore, everything pro wrestling. Make sure you check it out, TheChairShot.com.
All right. Welcome back, everyone. So I felt like last week, and I'll ask you, Dave, Tony, I don't know if you listened to the last week's show to get the top 10 sci-fi list, but overall, I was pretty happy with how things went. The only thing that I was a little worried about, and I think we might need to work on moving forward, is we really love these movies so much that we talk a lot about them when we went through. And so we went like a good hour and a half last week.
Hour and 40 minutes. But we're way ahead of pace today, Patrick.
Yeah, we're doing pretty well. But overall, I was really happy. And I saw the poll. Rick's not here to crow.
Yeah.
But we did put up on the Bandwagon Nerds poll, and we're going to do this for every one of these 80s project shows that we do. We're going to put up our top selections and let viewers or listeners, sorry, viewers, nobody's watching us. You don't want to see me on a, doing a recording of a podcast. That is not a pretty sight, but we're going to put our top, choices up there and let people vote, as the, who the big winner is. And the big winner, according to the listeners, or at least the, like the 20 people who follow Bandwagon Nerds on Twitter, was Back to the Future, which is solid sci-fi choice. It was in all of our lists, so I think that shows some merit to the movie itself anyway, and I really can't argue with that. I don't know, Tony or Dave, if you got any problems with that, but like, nobody likes Wrath of Khan. That's what I learned.
They do. It just, you're facing some majorly heavy competition with Empire and Back to the Future. I had no problem with Back to the Future winning. I mean, that's such an iconic movie that, yeah, I mean, any of the three of them would have been fine with me. I'm just curious, Tony, what would you have picked? What would have been your number one?
Back to the Future.
Okay. See, there you go.
A big Back to the Future fan. I recognize the greatness of the rest of those movies. It's awesome. The 80s project, it's just a testament to the 80s project in and of itself, is the fact that you can just take this single decade and see all these great movies and have a hard time coming up with the top 10 in just one specific genre. Even today, looking at the fantasy, I mean, this was no easy task to narrow it down. But, you know, like you said, Patrick, when we were talking, within 15, 20 minutes, you have 15, 20 movies off the top of your head.
Yeah, this was hard for me. And this is, I will say this, of all the genres that we're going to cover growing up, when it came to what I read, what I watched, what video games I played, the fantasy genre is where I grew up. Like, I read, for those of you who some people are going to know this, some are not, but I used to read novels that were basically D&D novelizations from the TSR publishing company, and a couple of their little fantasy worlds, the Forgotten Realms and Kryn, were the name of those worlds. I read those like they were my job. I played Final Fantasy. When Final Fantasy came out for the Nintendo, changed my life. The original Final Fantasy. Yeah. D&D was a big thing for me. I played Dungeons. I still have Dungeons and Dragons books. I still want to play Dungeons and Dragons, but when you're a dad and you have a job and like all your friends are dads and have jobs, you don't get to play as much.
I'll play with you, Patrick. I'll play, but I mean, we're 3,000 miles apart. But
hey. I mean, I don't know that I know you that well to let you
know that play kind of play.
Oh, okay. I wanted to share this while I say I even play. So TSR put out a set of computer games for the PC that were second edition Dungeons and Dragons video games. I am currently playing all of them through all over again. Right now, Patrick, that is what that stuff means.
I got to ask you, did you ever play the Dark Tower board game?
No, I never played the Dark Tower board game.
Have you heard of it?
I've heard of the Dark Tower board game.
They're remaking that.
Oh, really? I got a buddy who does a game night. I'm sure he's all over it. Cause he goes to PAX, he does all that sort of stuff. And so it's a great deal. But we're gonna follow this. Oh,
what's up?
You know what? Here, I'm just gonna say this and we can move on. And either you're gonna catch it or you're not. And if you're listening, you're gonna catch it or not. But the game that I really want to play is the Cones of Dunshire. So
yes. Very nice.
There you go.
I love that became a real game. Just throwing out there. So we're gonna follow this through like we did last week. We're gonna cover honorable mentions. I have too many honorable mentions to really cover them in any level of detail. So I literally will just be rattling off the movies, but then we're going to do our rotisserie style. We're going to do the rotation. This time will be myself, PC in the middle, Dave at the end. And then we restart with Dave, PC and myself, so on and so forth all the way through until we get to number one. The rules are pretty simple. we're going to rattle off a movie. If nobody else has the movie on the list, we want to very briefly talk about it. Try not to pontificate. I'm going to try to do better about not pontificating about movies like My Science Project, like I did last week. I figure I feel like I'd said too much about a really, you know, personal movie to me in the 80s for science fiction. But if the movie exists on other people's lists but is higher up, just make sure that you chime in so that we cover it when it gets to the highest point it is on any one person's list. Does that make sense?
Perfectly.
No, you can tell me what.
We'll tell you what to do, Tony. Don't worry.
Okay. We'll just like hold up a big stop sign. I'll get in front of the camera. We'll make sure you know. But for me, for honorable mentions, when it came to fantasy movies, like I said, it was so hard for me to like narrow this down. And so the movies that didn't make the list for me, and I think there's some movies that are going to be familiar to some folks. Lady Hawk, starring Rutger Hauer and Michelle Pfeiffer and Matthew Broderick. Dragon Slayer, which was a movie starring a very young Peter McNichol, who most people know from Ally McBeal. An animated anthology movie that called Heavy Metal, which was an anthology based on the magazine of the same name, which is a graphic art comic book magazine that they made a brief a couple of movies with. A space fantasy called Krull.
Yeah,
which has nobody famous in it, but has a very beautiful. And I don't know, is this on anybody's list?
It's not. I thought about it.
No, I know what you're talking
about. Has a cyclops, has a weird ninja star thing. It was beautiful, and then a Disney film. I think a Disney film that a lot of people like and remember fondly out of at least my group of friends, The Black Cauldron, which was a movie that really hurt Disney animation in the 80s.
It was their Masters of the Universe, huh?
Oh, it was. There's a very good documentary on Disney Plus about it's called Waking Sleeping Beauty. And they talk about how that flop and some of the other 80s animated films did not do well and were what it took to revive it. Tony, what about you? Did you have any honorable mentions or did you just do a list of 10?
Oh, no, I got honorable mentions.
All right. Well, honorable mention us, big guy.
I'll just run it down real quick here. Highlander ends up on my honorable mention. I'm sure that's going to be up higher up on somebody else's list there. Masters of the Universe. I saw that in the theater when I was a kid.
Me
okay.
Too.
I'm
sorry. Me too.
It's on my, you know, when they. You know what?
The key, man. Yeah.
The key. You know what I'm talking about. That was one hell of a. Anyway. My favorite part is when he's eating the chicken and they're like, what are we eating? He's like, don't think, just eat. Anyway,
all right. Rib bones.
Labyrinth is on my honorable mention. I just remember as a kid, David Bowie is in that movie, isn't he?
Yep.
Yeah. We're going to talk about that one later. Cause it's on a list.
I'm sure we will. The Land Before Time, I thought was a really cool fantasy cartoon with the dinosaurs and everything else like that. And then The Little Mermaid made honorable mention for me. That was classic Disney movie and just something that's really well done and that's continued to make money into the
also,
next.
Also on a list.
There you go.
Very cool. Well,
that's my honorable mention. That's my honorable mention.
Dave, what about you? You got any honorable mentions?
I got like three of them. One of them is Legend with Tom Cruise. That was
a list.
Is that on yours or Tunney's?
Oh no, I didn't. It didn't make the list. I cut it out. I remember that. You're right.
Legend.
Tim Curry.
Yes.
Awesome in that movie.
It was a very underrated movie. Beastmaster was on my honorable mention. Now, it's a cheap ripoff of something that's on our list.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. But Mark Singer and Tanya Roberts were... I mean, that movie is fun. I always loved Beastmaster. And then my last honorable mention is The Adventures of Baron von Munchausen, which is just... silliness bonkers. And just fun and just crazy, like what the hell's going on, but just a fun movie. So those are the honorable mentions I came up with.
Yeah, those are some great honorable mentions. I forgot about Legend. It was on the list of the big list of what I wrote because the we talked about special effects. The special effects in that movie, the puppetry is great. But we're done with honorable mentions. We're gonna go right into the list. I gave myself the honors of going first. And my number 10 was part of your honorable mentions, Tony, and that's The Little Mermaid. Terrific fantasy and the film that brought back Disney animation in a big way in 1989. They hadn't really done an old school animated film that made bank, and that movie did it. And it was it was, you know, it's not, it's retold in a way that isn't true to the tale. But it's such an important film that I couldn't leave it off, because of what it did moving forward. Without The Little Mermaid, you don't get The Lion King, you don't get Aladdin, you don't get Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah, it's not on my list, but I get why it's on your guys' list. It's a hugely influential movie. I mean, they got a ride after the damn movie over at Disney California Adventure. So that's right. I mean, and it's got, the music is iconic. The Ursula is the biggest bitch in the world in Kingdom Hearts, man. I hate that fucking scene.
Stupid cunt.
So yeah, Tony knows what I'm talking about, man. That is one of the nastiest bosses to try and get by in that game. But yeah, I think Little Mermaid's an excellent call, Patrick.
Thank you. All right, PC, what is your number 10?
My number 10 is the movie Mannequin.
Nice.
Nice one. Nice.
Andrew McCarthy.
Kim Cattrall. James Spader's actually in that movie as well. The guy walks by, he's intrigued by the mannequin. He ends up getting a job there, and so the hijinks ensues. I just remember I didn't see that when it came out. I ended up probably seeing it like when I was in my early teens. But it's such a fun movie. It's definitely a fantasy. Let me tell you something right now. If Mannequin 2 wouldn't have been in the 90s, it might have made this list. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, God, that movie's trash, man. Don't even.
I'm just kidding. But no, that's my number 10. If you've never seen it before and you're just in the mood to, you know, have a little fun one night, it's a good movie.
My number 10, and I got to be honest, I don't remember as much about this movie as I would like to, but I just remember that I really enjoyed it at the time, is The NeverEnding Story. That's my number 10 movie. And, you know, I mean, it's just a good story. There's a good adventure. They got some cool characters, puppetry, you know, that sort of thing, like you're talking about. It just, you know, I couldn't put
that movie. That movie as a kid traumatized me as a child.
Why is that?
Because you watch a horse sink and fucking die in a swamp slowly,
okay,
painfully, as a kid is in tears, begging this horse to just be happy. And as a 7-year-old watching that movie, like, I'm like, be happy, horse, what's wrong with you? And it devastated me almost as much as Optimus Prime dying in the Transformers movie.
Fair enough, man.
It was a tough watch. When I was little Patrick O'Dowd did not handle it well.
But that was my number 10, man. That's what I had.
Iconic theme song too.
Yes. Yes.
Everybody knows that song.
So I go for number 9, right?
Right. Back to you.
But our number 9s are identical. I know your number 9 is the same as mine, which is weird. And that's Excalibur.
Yes.
Geez. Everything I learned about King Arthur and a little bit
from Excalibur.
I learned from Excalibur. There's just enough sexual tension to get the young minds that we were back then kind of going and that sort of thing. But,
bear in mind that you are 10 years older than me, sir.
I know. So it had a different impact on me than you're probably like, what the hell's going on? But
right. I didn't know much. Like knights in like shining armor. Yeah, and like,
I didn't know much of what was going on, but it's a great story. I mean, the story of King Arthur, the story of Excalibur, his sword, you know,
how did Lancelot do Arthur dirty like that, man? Yeah, that was uncool.
Exactly. It really was. And it's kind of the Sword in the Stone, that sort of thing. Another Disney movie, but it's brought to life.
Can I tell you my favorite Excalibur thing though?
Sure.
Is that the magic words from Excalibur were the same magic words that the Undertaker used when he was doing that, going through that dark magic phase with, when he was kidnapping Stephanie and stuff.
Which ones were they?
Enel, Nathrak, something, something. I can't remember it all, but if you go back and it was, Undertaker in the early night or in the like late 90s, when he was doing the robes and was like kidnapping Stephanie and like putting her up on the, like on the thing to sacrifice her, he's saying these magic words. Those are the magic words from fucking Excalibur.
Wow. That's impressive. I did not realize that, but it's just a fun movie. I mean, it's got adventure, right, action. It's got everything you could want. Great story, some loose ties to actual history, if you believe in that sort of stuff. So it had everything. I'm surprised we both had it at number 9. That's pretty cool though.
Yeah. I love it. Love it very much. Introduced me to Liam Neeson, Patrick Stewart, and a couple of other really famous British actors. Tony, what's your number 9, buddy?
My number nine was Dave's number 10, The Neverending Story. I thoroughly enjoyed that. As a child, I laughed when the horse died. Sorry, Patrick.
Damn, dude, that's cold.
Yeah.
So anyway.
The flying, you know, the flying and everything else and the song.
The Luck Dragon.
Just a very, very enjoyable as a young child.
Now, Tony, as a reminder, if you see, if we say something that's on your list further up, you got to stop us because
it's fine. Dave, quality analysis there.
No, this isn't NOM, man. There are rules.
All right, Donnie, it's bowling. I get it.
You're out of your element. Well, we don't have to cover my number nine because it was Excalibur as well. So I'm going to jump right into my number eight, where I went into some Japanese animation because I decided I wanted to do some deep cuts. And the first film I ever saw that introduced me to anime was the movie Vampire Hunter D, which is hard to describe. It's a cyberpunk fantasy about a half vampire searching for Dracula. He's protecting a young woman on a deserted ranch, but it's got steampunk elements to it. It's got fantasy magic, and that movie led me down the rabbit hole of watching anime for the rest of my life. Like one of the things I appreciate about Netflix streaming is just the sheer volume of anime that I can catch through them, and it all started with Vampire Hunter D. And that's all I got to say about that.
I wish I could comment, but I haven't seen it.
But you should check it out.
It sounds fun.
Like, the animation's amazing. It's a whole other level of animation, anime in general. And it's definitely worth a watch. It's hard to find on it. I don't think it's streaming anywhere. But it's definitely worth a rental if you can find it. So, Tony, back to you for number eight.
Number eight, Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, you got to hold on that one. That is definitely further on my list. Yeah,
just so you know, though, it's number eight on my list as well, Tony.
Get the fuck out of here.
No, I swear, it's number eight on mine as well.
This is going that's crazy. This is going to go faster just because we're sinking.
That's not going to hold, trust me.
Okay.
So my number seven then, because we're going, I got this pattern figured out this time, Patrick.
There you go.
My number seven, I know it's not on Patrick's list. I don't know if it's on Tunney's, but it's Big Trouble in Little China. Tunney, you got it on yours?
Higher up. We got it higher up.
All right, we'll hold off on that.
Very nice. So what's your number seven, Tunney?
I think this is higher up on someone else's list, but my number seven is Willow.
Actually, no. It was one of the ones I thought about, though, but it's not on my list.
My bad. I must have been thinking of something else. So I recently actually, it was maybe two or three weekends ago. I was going to go out.
Streaming on Netflix now.
Yeah. I was going to go out and I got home from work and I sat down and I was like, this feels way better than getting ready and going out to the bar. So I went on Netflix and I hadn't watched it in a while and I actually watched it. I mean, Val Kilmer's in that movie. He does a really good job. It's really an enjoyable movie. It's a great adventure. I actually seen that in the movie theaters as a kid. I saw tons of. I was born in the second earliest year of the 80s, and just 85, 86, 87, 88. I seen so many movies in the movie theater. My grandparents, I spent a lot of time with them. That's what they would do every Friday. So I remember going to a lot of great 80s movies. Unfortunately, one of them was Platoon. My grandpa thought I could handle that. And I was like,
oh, my goodness.
I think I fell asleep after the first 15 minutes or just closed my eyes and pretended I wasn't there. So anyway.
Better off, man. Almost.
Wow. I also seen Born on the 4th of July in the movie theater.
Jesus,
so
Jesus, man. Good Lord. Yeah. What the hell?
Grandparents hated you, Tony.
No wonder you're sitting in the dark recording right now. God damn, man.
So wow. Willow,
great movie. Yeah, Ron Howard. I don't feel like that movie aged very well at all, which is why I fell off my list. But that puts me at my number seven, right?
Yep.
All right. I'm not sure if this is on anybody else's list, but I you know, Rick talked about movies he wore out when he was young. I wore this VCR, this VHS out, watching Clash of the Titans.
Wait, repeat that. You broke up there, buddy.
Oh, I wore out the VHS watching Clash of the Titans.
Oh, it's much
the 1980s.
Much higher
on your list.
I'm almost depressed that it's this low on your list, Patrick.
I'm a little embarrassed for you that it's that high on your list, but that's okay.
Oh, look at that.
Look how I flipped that one. So we'll go into my number six, then we'll go right into it. And this was another one that was hard for me because I really almost wanted to put down the animation company that churned out these movies. There's about three or four that I didn't use an honorable mention, but the one that I chose, for those of you who don't know, Rankin and Bass, for the longest time, and for a lot of you, if you've watched any animated Christmas special, you've seen a Rankin and Bass production because you've watched Rudolph the Red-Nosed Reindeer or you've watched Frosty the Snowman. But they also put out a lot of great genre fantasy animated films. And in the 80s, they put out one by the name of The Last Unicorn. And I don't know if nobody else got this on the list. Am I the only one who went like whole animation on this? Again, another great, great movie, really dark. Bo Bridges does some voice work in that. Mia Farrow is the voice of The Last Unicorn. You know, I love animation. I love what it can do in film. Obviously, I've got three animated movies in the bottom of half of this list. Rankin and Bass is really underrated. They did the animated Hobbit movie, those who don't know. And it's that distinctive style of drawing and animation that's there. And they put out a couple of movies in the 80s. And The Last Unicorn was one of my favorites as a tale of magic. And its disappearance. Very, very, very good film. Can't recommend it enough. It's streaming on Amazon, I do believe. Worth a watch. Take the time to watch it.
Sounds good.
All right, Tony, to you, number six.
Number six for me is Gremlins.
It's higher on my list.
I thought it might be.
My number six, I don't know if this appears. I know it's not on Patrick's list. It might be on Tony's, but it's the other mermaid movie that came out in the 80s, and it's Splash.
It should have been on my, retrospectively, in hindsight, it's also on my honorable mention, Dave.
Thank you. Look, this movie was one of those ones that I went to see in the theaters and absolutely fell in love with, not just Daryl Hannah, but just the entire story, the entire concept of Eugene Levy is absolutely brilliant in this fucking movie. Tom Hanks is in this movie, and he's fantastic. It's, you know, this is before he started becoming too, you know, drama focused. He wasn't Forrest Gump, and he wasn't you know, some of the other roles he did later on. He was still kind of in that bosom buddies sort of phase of his career, and he was absolutely brilliant. But it's just a great story about what happens if mermaids were real. And I gotta be honest with you guys. I mean, I'm gonna out myself here, but I'm a sucker for romance in movies, especially if there's a fantasy element tied around it. And that's what this had. It had this great fantasy element, and it's a funny movie. It's just got everything in it. I absolutely love Splash. So it got number six on my list.
Thank you for sharing your mermaid fetish with us. Yeah. I appreciate that.
The bottom line here is that if you're out at sea and the sirens start a call, and don't let Dave near the wheel. That's
right. We're all dead.
That's right. Well, my number five was the one that Tony just mentioned as his number six, and it's Gremlins. And you want to talk about this one, Tony?
No, go ahead. I haven't watched it in a while, but yeah. Everybody knows what you're talking about. Almost everybody sees the movie. I mean, there's so many different points to it that you can mention that people know about. The explosion in the microwave. Don't get them wet. Don't feed them after midnight.
Baby Yoda in some ways looks a lot like Mogwai. That's just my opinion, but he's got some Mogwai sort of similarities. But it's just a good movie. No, the special effects aren't going to blow anybody away, but Phoebe Cates is in the damn movie. That counts for a lot when you get a Phoebe Cates sighting. So, you know, it's just good, the concept of how they switch from cute cuddly to, oh my God, these things are the nastiest, evilest creatures possible. It's just fun. You know, and it's just chaos. It's craziness. It's campy. It's got it all, man. It's got it all. That's why I've got it at number five. Tony,
it's an iconic movie. Yeah. It's an iconic movie. I don't really have much to add to that. You let's put it this way, folks. If you're already listening, you already know. And if you know people that aren't listening, go tell other people that are interested in the kind of things we're talking about to listen, because Patrick and Dave know a lot about what they're talking about, and they really can connect some dots for you. Like, trust me, I'm light years ahead of Rick, right? But I am nowhere near Patrick and Dave. So let's just you know, put that into a synopsis right there. So that's what I got to say about that. Dave pretty much hit the head with Gremlins, but it's an entertaining movie and one that you'll remember.
Right, absolutely. I love Gremlins. It's interesting. I view it as a campy horror movie, like a horror comedy. Yeah. And so that's why I didn't go fantasy with that. That's why this genre was so hard, because it's so broad. Tunney, what's your number five, buddy?
My number five, Dave brought it up earlier in his list. It's a little lower down, but Big Trouble in Little China is some of the most fun I've ever had watching a movie in my entire life. Kurt Russell is amazing. Everything that goes on in there, from the magic and the mystique and going through these different levels of trying to escape and all the different elements, you know, it's awesome. I think I want to kick it over to Dave and have him talk about it, because he's so much better at remembering the details.
I mean, a guy blows up in that movie, right?
For multiple reasons. His head blows up.
His head blows up. I mean, with Scanners, about the same time Scanners was going on, that sort of thing. But it was just funny. Yeah, like you said, Tony, it's just a super fun movie. It's got everything. It's got action. It's got adventure. It's got martial arts. It's got, you know, Asian mysticism. It's got two girls with green eyes. You got Kim Cattrall in there. It's just, my wife tried to watch it the other day. She couldn't do it. She hated it. I'm like, well, you just don't get it then, you know, that sort of thing. But
I seem to recall like a sushi scene or something.
I don't remember. Maybe there was a sushi scene. I don't know. But
I don't know.
But there's, you know, you got some crazy creatures, but they didn't overdo it. That sort of thing. Got, it's just, there's so much good stuff going on, and it's just got a good story. And Kurt Russell is fantastic. He's kind of like a quasi superhero, you know, that sort of thing, without the superpowers, but he's just badass in the whole movie. It's just too much fun. Yeah. If you haven't seen it, you owe it to yourself to check it out. I mean, they never did a sequel, which I think a lot of us wanted. It never happened. They had the material there. That's for sure. But it's just a fun, good movie. And,
absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, so that brings me to my number five, and this is the first of my two Jim Henson selections on there, and that's Labyrinth. I know it got mentioned earlier in somebody's somewhere. I don't think Dave has it on his list at all.
Thought about it.
My first introduction to Jennifer Connelly, as we talk about crushes, you know, teenage Jennifer. And let's talk about a woman who does not age. Jennifer Connelly is still like the most amazing, gorgeous woman who, what is she? She's got to be in her 50s, right? Like, I don't know how old she is, but if hot was an age, it's Jennifer Connelly. But, you know, you mentioned David Bowie's in that. A lot of great music, a lot of fun. Some of the most complicated puppets you'll ever see. There's a character named Hoggle.
She's 49, Patrick.
49. Oh, my gosh. Hell yeah. And still looks like she's like 27. So Jennifer Connelly, though, plays like this really, like, she does this great, like, just bratty teenager throughout the whole thing. And there's so many great jokes and one-liners. I can't speak enough about it. And the amount of work that went into that Hoggle puppet is amazing. She, again, documentaries and behind the scenes stuff that show so complicated and shows what a genius Jim Henson really was when it came to what he saw puppetry as more than just a medium for children.
I agree. It's a fun movie. It's another one. I mean, fun is the operative word in a lot of these fantasy movies. They're just fun,
right?
You know, and they're not going to win Academy Awards for best acting or best picture or anything like that, but they're just
certainly
fun.
Not.
But they're just fun movies.
Right. So let's talk about number four, which was definitely not fun. I walked away from this with one really important lesson, and that is I learned what is best in life. And what is best in life is to crush your enemies, see them driven before you, and hear the lamentations of the women. Those words of wisdom coming from Conan the Barbarian at number four. Did anybody have it higher before I move forward?
No, I had it down. Where did I have it? At eight. So
you had it at eight. All right.
We both had it.
That's right.
That's right. That's right. That was the tie.
So it made all three of our lists, though. That's the first
hell
one.
Hell yeah. James Earl Jones as an evil overlord wizard that turns into a snake. Arnold Schwarzenegger punching out a camel. Just laughing as though a dude fucking a camel. And him, and it, you know, like that is in that movie. That is the thing that happens. Just, and if you've ever read the comic, like, it just gets that tone of that comic so well. Love that movie so much that I hate Conan the Destroyer.
Yeah.
Fuck you, Will Chamberlain.
It definitely fell flat compared to the first one. But like you said, I mean, this movie's so good. I mean, just what he where they like tie him to that fucking wheel that he's just got to walk around for 20 years right. or whatever it is, and he just becomes, you know, it's like, oh, okay, so this is how you got big. It wasn't steroids. It was this. I got it. That's right. How it worked.
When he was crucified and he bites the head off the vulture.
Yes.
To keep himself alive. Just, there's so much ridiculous shit in that movie. I love it so much. I'll probably need to watch it tomorrow afternoon after I get off work.
I mean, this was really the movie that put Arnold on the map. I mean, because this was,
oh yeah,
this was like before Terminator, just barely, but it was before Terminator. I mean, this was, I mean, up until that, he was what everybody knew him as. Oh, okay, 6-time Mr. Olympia. Greatest body.
Yeah, it was the start of a big run for him.
Still to this day, probably the greatest body in all of bodybuilding history, that sort of thing. But it showed, hey, this guy can actually act, you know, not very well, but he can actually act and he could portray a certain thing. And I mean, that movie is just too much, like you said, Patrick, too much crazy shit going on and just the never ending relentlessness of Conan. I am going to take you, Darth Vader. I mean, guy who voices Darth Vader, and kick your ass and end you. Red Sonja wasn't exactly a good follow-up either, was it?
No, it was what it was. So, but Tunney, we're up to your number four, your top four. What do you got for us, man?
My number four is Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Oh, nice.
Nice. Good call.
That is just a phenomenal fucking movie. Another one I've seen in the movie theater.
Was that like 88, 89, somewhere there?
Yeah, I seen that with my dad in the movie theater, and we just laughed. We just laughed so hard together, and it was something where I was not quite 10, and he was a grown adult, and we could go watch the movie, and he didn't have to shade me from any of it, and he was just as much entertained as I was, right? Christopher Lloyd plays the villain there. I mean, everybody in that movie is really good. Kathleen Turner,
She's Jessica.
The way they mix the cartoon in with the real life from that time was just spectacular.
You know, a very rare successful brand crossover film with Warner Brothers and DC, or I'm sorry, not DC, Warner Brothers and Disney making appearances in both films, much more successful than any JLA Marvel Avengers crossover event.
Stop already. Can we acknowledge something though? Okay, the elephant in the room about Who Framed Roger Rabbit. It's the movie that actually had grown men have a crush on an animated character. And I knew a lot of people who had that going on for good reason.
The thing that I find fascinating, you kind of hinted at it, Tony. There's a lot of adult humor that goes right over kids' heads. And for me, there's the joke I remember
patty
off the top of my head.
Doing patty cake.
Well, there's the patty. I remember them hit the detective, Dennis Haskins character, being like, okay, or Bob Hoskins being like, okay, go check the probate. And Roger Rabbit being like, yeah, check the probate. My uncle had a problem with his probate once. He had to take these big pills and drink lots of water. Not prostate, you idiot. Probate. Like stuff like that. I didn't know what the shit that meant. Like, I didn't know that. Genius, great writing in that movie.
Robert Zemeckis, man. He deserves a lot of
credit
for that.
He was a very smart guy. All right, Dave, what's your number four, man?
My number four, I know, is higher on yours, and it is The Princess Bride. So let's just...
Okay, we'll move on.
Move along. My number three, though... Oh, wait. Tony says it's higher on his, too. So...
Yes.
My number three, we mentioned it last week when we were talking... I don't know if we were talking about Back to the Future or something. I forget what we were talking about. Oh, when you were talking about Ice Pirates, we mentioned this. And it's Time Bandits.
Time Bandits
is number three on my list. Oh man, talk about just craziness going on, silliness. The running from some omnipresent being that's chasing them through time it's just this kid who gets caught up in these time traveling dwarfs, basically, for lack of a better term, and they get in all these crazy adventures. and they go to the wildest places. And I mean, and there's so much fun stuff that's happening in this movie. Just the adventures that they go from place to place to place. And the whole time, there is an overriding element as to where we're going with this. They're trying to get to this one place. And then at the end of the whole thing, you're not really sure whether any of it was real. But you think it was, but you're really not sure at the end of the whole thing whether it was real or that the kid dreamed it or made the whole thing up. So one of my absolute favorite fantasy movies of all time, Time Bandits.
So where's Tunny?
There's Tunny.
Yeah, I was like, so on to Tunny. I have nothing to add.
All right. We're at number three here?
Yeah.
Yes, we are.
Well, Dave had a Tom Hanks movie on his list, so I have a Tom Hanks movie on my list, and that movie is the movie Big.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I thought it was, I wanted it on mine, I guess it's like one of those ones, it's a more comedy sort of thing, but it does have that fantasy element for sure.
It's just another movie where it's kind of like the whole family kind of thing where there are certain adult elements to it. But like right away, the kids want to see it because he becomes a creator of toys as a kid, goes back as a kid. They play that giant fucking piano. Right. I mean,
oh, yeah.
It's just a super cool concept.
He gets to have a sleepover.
Right. Well, first of all, they start out with the relationship of the two kids and they're talking back and forth between the windows. And what young boy growing up isn't like, yeah, me and my best friend, we're up past, you know, going to bed and we can actually talk to each other. Like you instantly think that's cool no matter what. Right.
Oh, yeah, totally.
And you have the love story element for the women and everything else. But just another great classic Tom Hanks movie. I can't remember who directed it, but I'm pretty sure it was a heavy hitter.
I don't remember.
I'll have to look that up while you guys.
I do like look it up. One of the Marshalls. Was it Gary or Penny?
Penny Marshall, maybe.
Penny probably directed it.
Do you want me to say that? You mean a sleepover? Okay, but I get to be on top.
Sort of thing. Hell yeah.
It was Penny Marshall.
Bam. Yep. Look at that.
There you go. Good call, Patrick.
I know useless shit. Anyway. My number three, I don't know that I think it showed up somewhere in an honorable mention, but for me it was Highlander. There can be only one.
Only one, yeah.
And that the only way that you can kill them is by cutting off their heads is just outstanding.
You talk about the movie. Can I just throw in a quick quip from wrestling? One of the last articles, yes, I used to write articles, I wrote was about when they split the world title and I hated it. And so I wanted the article. Greg changed the fucking title on me, and I wanted to read Highlander. There can only be one in equation to the world heavyweight title. So I apologize once again for interrupting, but I like to throw that quirky shit in there and then dig on Greg. We love you anyway. Go ahead, Patrick.
I mean, you know, airing your dirty laundry is fine. You know, no judgment here. Judgment free zone. Sean Connery in a role that you're just not used to seeing him as a Spaniard. Was outstanding. Christopher Lambert with that weird voice of his, beautiful. I'm going to forget his name. Character actor. He's in a lot of stuff. Was in Shawshank, plays Kurgan. And I can't remember his name. It's going to elude me and somebody's going to yell at me later. So I'll IMDb it while Tony talks about his number three. But and a movie that opens with the Fabulous Freebirds. So how can you go wrong with that? Because they start in a wrestling show. But totally great movie, totally 80s, spawned some really bad sequels, and a TV show that lasted way longer than you would have ever expected it to on USA.
Yeah, that's true.
And now we're going to my number two, right? Because that's my number three. So my number two is The Princess Bride. It was almost my number one, and it looks like it is Tunney's number one.
There you go.
So I'm going to hold off because that's why I made it number two, because I figured somebody would have a number one.
So my number two then is Beetlejuice. Sorry, crossover here, but that's one of my favorite movies of all time. I actually watched it a couple months ago. Whenever it's on, no matter what point it's at, I mean, you have that pretty much made Michael Keaton. And then, I mean, I know he did some big movies before that, but that like really put him out there. And then he turns around and turns it into Batman after that, right? I mean, you have Gina Davis, you have Winona Ryder, right?
Yes.
You have Alec Baldwin.
Yep.
And some of the secondary actors in
Gina
that movie
Davis.
Are interesting things. Yeah, well, I said Gina Davis.
Oh, but I missed that.
Winona Ryder's dad is actually the principal from Ferris Bueller's Day Off. I can't remember his name.
That's right.
Her mom is something else. There's another guy in there who plays the Reverend. I mean, it's such a classic. You know, there's
Catherine O'Hara.
Faces. Yep. it's such a classic movie. It's so well done. It's so entertaining. And once again, it's kind of a lot of the biggest popular movies of the 80s. It's something the whole family can go to the theater and watch. Didn't see that one in the theater. Biscuits and Gravy.
Biscuits and Gravy. All right. There you go.
Sometimes say that instead of son of a bitch.
Yeah, there you go. My number two is a movie we discussed last week when we were talking Back to the Future. One of the rare movies that takes a different approach on time travel, and it's Somewhere in Time. It's Look, I mean, it didn't do well in the box office. I know that it attained cult status after the fact, but Christopher Reeve has been, a lot of people have talked about how he could only do Superman. Go watch this movie if you want to see just the depth and range that he had as an actor, and just the stuff he does in this movie. And talk about a woman who doesn't age.
Oh, Jane Seymour.
She's 68 now. She still looks pretty damn good.
Dude, I'll tell you what. Wedding
what's
Crashers.
Medicine Woman, right?
Dr. Quinn. Sure. The first movie I ever saw her in was Live and Let Die, James Bond film. She was a Bond girl. She's gorgeous, gorgeous woman.
Yeah, one of my definite crushes.
I think she was ageless pussy, she was, right?
Call me Kitty Cat. The Wedding Crashers.
That's right.
She's the mom of the daughters.
That's right. But
she's still hot in that movie too.
I mean, Jesus. What made this movie to me is the time travel, the idea that you could actually hypnotize yourself and travel back in time by convincing your mind that it's 1912 and not 1979 or 1980 or whatever. It was 1980, I guess, the movie. But it's got this ultimate love story. I mean, it's got that. I mean, Titanic ripped off the end of Somewhere in Time when Rose goes up the stairway and everybody's waiting for him. Like, I've seen that somewhere before. It's like, oh, that's the end of Somewhere in Time. The concept that somebody could die of a broken heart. I mean, and they just, in the way that they spit, it's based on Richard Matheson, a famous author, wrote the story called, I think it's called A Splinter in Time, that sort of thing. Great story. But the way they get you, like right at the end where you think, wow, they've overcome all this stuff, it's actually going to work. And then he sees a penny from 1979 that brings him back to the present. And then he dies of a broken heart. But we used to sit around and try and figure out the timeline. Okay, what came first? How did this actually all fit together? Something had to happen. Why was he in the past the whole time? And I mean, it really fucks with your brain after a while. But love this movie. One of my mom's favorites when she was alive. We used to watch this all the time. I can't say enough about it. If you haven't seen it, do yourself a favor and watch it.
All right, we're to number one.
My number one was way lower on your list, Patrick. And it's Clash of the Titans, man. Clash of the Titans taught me everything that I ever learned about one of the most famous Greek mythology stories. I mean, yes, the special effects are stop motion based and they're cheesy as fuck by modern standards, but man, Harry Hamlin was so good in that movie. You had Laurence Olivier was Zeus, for God's sake. I mean, right. Burgess Meredith was the playwright on Joppa. I mean, you had the introduction of Medusa, the Gorgon, and just how badass and crazy that whole scene was where he's watching her reflection to cut her head off and everything he's got to go through, the three witches, and then, of course, the Kraken. I mean, Jesus. That movie was so iconic, and I saw it so many times. It has such an impact on me that when I see the Sam Worthington one on TV now, I actually get disappointed that it's not the 1980s version of Clash of the Titans. Love the movie. Can't say enough about it. Wore it out. Went to see it in the theaters like six times when I was a kid. It's just, I mean, I could not think of any movie that I liked more fantasy-based in the 1980s than Clash of the Titans.
So, and I'm going to interject a couple of thoughts here on this. Ray Harryhausen as a special effects guy is iconic throughout history. And this was his last film and was really just the peak of what he could do with his powers. And you can see all kinds of films before then in the 70s, in the 60s. There was Jason and the Argonauts. There was The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad. There's Sinbad the Eye of the Tiger. Some really great fantasy films that he did, some other science fiction films as well at the time. The tension that is built in the Medusa scene is up there with anything that you could possibly build in a film. As you wait, and you, even though you know that he's going to be okay, as she's just slowly getting closer and closer, and he manages to cut off her head at the right time. It's brilliant. I love that movie. I do. Obviously, it was on my list, just not as high as yours.
Fair enough, man. Fair enough.
All right, Tony.
Yeah. We know what Tony's number one is.
Number one, The Princess Bride. I mean, just take away all the phenomenal actors in this movie. Take away the unbelievable storyline. And take away, the fact that I think the biggest point that I'm trying to get to, and I mean, I'm really kind of swinging and missing as I'm getting to it, is the fact that this is a story being told to a little kid by his grandfather that we're watching on film. And it's such a brilliant fucking thing. That little concept of the movie, it propels this movie into another echelon, right? Because if the movie was just the book, The Princess Bride, and there was no Columbo narrating it to Fred Savage, it would still be great, but it wouldn't be as great as it is, right? And then the story inside of it, everything that happens, all the different things. Wallace Shawn is a fucking genius in this movie. That guy is just phenomenal, right? The back and forth with the poison, everything else. You have Andre the Giant. Hello, my name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die.
That's right.
Okay.
And of course, As You Wish.
Yeah.
As You Wish.
And For Love. They did
which is,
it for
which
love.
Is almost okay, the same as I Have Spoken.
I'll do it for love. Yeah. And they invented the French kiss at the end of that movie, by the way.
Oh, how about that? That's nice to know. also shows that Rob Reiner could be a hell of a director. And did a really great job with that movie. So can't find fault with that. It was my number two. My number one goes back to the Jim Henson well. And you heard me talk a little bit about his view on puppetry. But his kind of opus to it all is The Dark Crystal. And it's, you know, it's not a movie that made a ton of money. But it really does, again, just showcase the genius of Jim Henson. And it's an epic in scope fantasy film in that classic trope, very Star Wars, obviously, actually, if you really want to get down to it, with Jen, this Gelfling, who is an orphan on a quest. He has a mentor. His mentor dies. He's the only one who can fulfill a prophecy. There's a MacGuffin for him to chase. And that film, to me, and I think this is true for all of our number ones, there's no ending to its rewatchability. There's always something new that I can pick up on in that movie. There's some new nuance. The level of detail, the attention to detail in that movie to make a completely artificial world real with practical effects is astounding to me. And to do it with puppets, with you know, the kind of work that they had to go through. And again, with any of these movies, watching behind the scenes featurettes and documentaries as to how they made, it blows your mind the work that these artists went through to put this thing on the screen. And its longevity, the series that has come out now on Netflix is amazing. I can't believe that they were able to do this as a prequel and tell a story, but it speaks to the longevity of the film, in my opinion. I watch it all the time. I watch it with my kid. He gets wrapped up into it. I love it. I can't speak highly enough about it.
It was one of the many that I mulled over putting on the list. I just didn't have it on mine, but I like the call.
That's the thing. These are, as we talked about last week, these are our lists. Yeah. So this is what our top 10 is. There's no real wrong answer to it.
I would say that in the poll this week, I got a feeling Princess Bride will take it.
Oh, I think it's going to run. I think it's going to run away with it.
It'll be a run. Easily.
It was really a tough call for me, whether I went Princess Bride or Dark Crystal.
Yeah.
Princess Bride, You pick a television state, you pick a television listings, like as you go through, it's probably playing somewhere right now, whether it's on a premium channel or on cable. It's just it's always on, and it's an enduring story. Like that's the great thing I think about all three of these number ones. These aren't they're dated only in the sense of when the film was made, but when you really watch these movies, they're really timeless. You can plug it in at any time in any generation, and you're going to be able to watch it and relate to them in various ways. Yeah. And that's what makes a great film. So
you look at that Clash of the Titans remake, and it was nothing. It doesn't hold up. No, not at all.
Doesn't hold up.
Can I just add one quick quip here? Just because we're on fantasy movies, and I know it's an 80s list, but I just got a shout out to my very favorite movie of all time, which I've seen more times than I could know because my parents said they had to buy it over and over again when I was a child because it literally stopped working because it had to be on all the time. And in my opinion, it could possibly be the greatest movie of all time, and it's in the fantasy genre. It's The Wizard of Oz. So I just wanted to throw there. I'd be remiss in a fantasy list show not to say that Wizard of Oz is my favorite of all time. So
and light years ahead of its time. So
you remember when we were kids? I don't know if you guys had the same way. They would only show it once a year before it was on cable, and everybody would get so excited for that one day of the year that they were going to show Wizard of Oz. You'd wait. It was almost like Christmas, right? You'd circle your calendar.
You could get it on VHS, you know?
Right.
My mom used to tell me this story. She grew up on a farm, and her parents owned a black and white television for a really long time. That's all they had. But for the day that they would show The Wizard of Oz, they would always visit her aunt's house, and her aunt had a color TV. And she resented her parents because they would always leave this party right before the Horse of a Different Color scene. And so my mom, for the longest time, had never seen the Horse of a Different Color. I think many, many families have a Wizard of Oz story. So perfectly, perfectly reasonable to bring that up, Tony. And I think a good way to cap this week's 80s project as we talk about our top films from the 80s. And this week's poll going up on Tuesday will be the pick 'em of the number ones. And so you'll get to choose between The Dark Crystal, Clash of the Titans, and what we think will probably be the runaway winner, The Princess Bride.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Sorry, guys.
No, it's fine. Don't. So there you have it. Looking at the time on the total length of time on the clock versus what the show was, we went about an hour and a half today. I'm okay with it. I feel like it was a good little go around. Great to hear everybody's list.
Right now we're 17 minutes shorter than last week. So
there you go. So we are going to wrap up, this week's edition of the Bandwagon Nerds podcast. But before we do, gentlemen, I'm going to give you an opportunity to tell everybody where they can find you. We'll start with Mr. Dave. Big Rick's not here. So Mr. Dave.
Well, you can find me at Attitude Ag. That is at Attitude AGG, or on Facebook, facebook.com/attitudeofaggression. Also, make sure you are checking out the official Twitter account of the Bandwagon Nerds at Bandwagon Nerds. Don't forget it, folks.
Excellent. Mr. Tunney, tell them where they can find you.
Yeah, in addition to checking out that at Bandwagon Nerds Twitter feed, there's going to be a poll every day, folks, and it's well thought through. I said it right the first time. I don't know why I stuttered there. biscuits and gravy. See, now that's going to get over. All right, make sure you check it out every day. You got to retweet. You got to like. You got to give your own if it's not on there. Okay, let's get the ball rolling there. You can find me at PC Tunney. You can also find me on the DWI podcast. You can find that at Podcast DWI. In addition, unfortunately, weekly, I have to spend time with Balls and Platt. Just kidding. Love those guys. Check out Pod is War. Head on over to the chair shot.
Those are people, by the way. Make sure people know that you have to spend time with Balls and Platt. Those are people's names.
Yeah, whatever. You spend as much time with them as I do. You begin to wonder whether they're people or aliens. But most importantly, since one half of what's happening a week from today as we record, and I'm almost done, Patrick, I'm sorry, is the return of the motherfucking TriCast. I'm talking myself, the scientist, DPP. We got Big Dave Unger on the show with Attitude of Aggression, and the return of the one and only, the man across the pond, Kenny Killa, from the Sunday Segway. So if you don't tune in next week for that, you're a slap nuts.
I agree.
Okay. Well, and I am Patrick O'Dowd. You can follow me on Twitter at Wrestling Realist. The numbers are still not looking good, fellas. Still holding steady at 456 followers. Somebody follow me.
At least you didn't lose anybody. You didn't lose anybody.
I know. I'm begging at this point, though. It's pathetic. It's just really sad. But you can follow me at Wrestling Realist at WrestlingRealist. You can also hear me every Wednesday on the Greg DeMarco show when we talk about pro wrestling or I get thrust onto game shows that I hate. Next week on Bandwagon Nerds, we're going to move on to our next top 10 list as part of the 80s project. We're going to cover action films. I have a feeling we're going to hear a lot of machine gun fire, a lot of Stallone, a lot of Schwarzenegger. It's going to be great. Don't miss it. Until then, climb out of the basement, fellow basement dwellers. Get a little sunlight. It's wintertime, so you won't get a sunburn. And we'll see you next week.
Later, guys.